On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are stealing Shetland ponies alongside Joe Gilgan and his band of scallies in Brassic, getting our Jane Austen on in ITV's Sanditon, being denied access to Netflix's fun suicide-slash-sexual-assault drama, 13 Reasons Why, and finally being reunited with one of the Beeb's most successful dramas, which we have each been tasked with giving a good review. By order of the Peaky Blinders. I'm James Dyer and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your weekly guide to Picard trailers, minute-by-minute updates on the new season of The Expanse, and whatever truly depressing crime documentaries Terry has watched this week. Speaking of which, rejoining us this week, after her week away, is our Ray of Northern Sunshine, the only woman I know who, as someone on Twitter pointed out this week, makes no distinction between the words Buffy and buffet. It's Terry White. Hello.
You are.
Someone on Twitter quite accurately pointed out that for you, buffet is a vampire slayer and also where you get up to eat food at a hotel restaurant.
At a northern wedding.
At a northern wedding, yes, yes.
That is accurate, but also they're pronounced exactly the same, so I don't see what the point is. Can I just say that I thought we had a deal where, you know, somebody goes off on holiday, you replace them like for like. Yep. I don't believe we did like for like. You replaced me with one of the funniest, greatest, smartest women walking this earth.
I thought you'd be honoured that it takes, this is the way of looking at it, it takes a legendary TV comedy superstar who's created her own brilliant TV shows to replace you.
I suppose so. But I mean, what a woman!
Yeah,
and how amazing was Game Face?
It was fantastic. Yeah, absolutely.
The end. I don't want to skip.
I haven't seen it.
I'm so thrilled for her. The response has just been incredible across the board. It feels like it completely went to another level. And she got all of the recognition she deserved. And thank you for keeping my seat warmer than warm.
Joining Terry and myself is a second tier vigilante. A man who has spent the majority of his professional career in Batman's shadow. I refer, of course, to his sidekick Robin, otherwise known as the Boyd Wonder.
Oh, slightly a little contrived.
Labored. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I thought Roisin Connerty gave you some schooling in how to do comedy last week.
Yeah, she
tried. It doesn't seem to have had much effect.
No. Admittedly, that wasn't my best work. But I mean, you know, I've been thrown. Like the gang is back together. That's exciting.
You know what you are today so far? Because let's you're a bit of a hot mess.
Yes.
Because you can't read
indeed.
Anything. You don't know what you're doing.
I know.
You're all over the place.
I am. Also, I've had a week off. Like I've been quite, you know. So we're recording this on Monday morning, so later than usual to accommodate the one week that I've taken off in the last decade or so from work. So that was nice.
Sorry, everybody. That's the world's tiniest violin coming in for the world's biggest martyr.
And yet, despite having taken a week off, here I am back to do the podcast, unlike yourself last week.
You are due back in work today.
Yeah. What's your point?
So I was meant to come in on my holiday, but you moved the podcast to be recorded on your first day back at work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's good. No, but we needed the dream team back together. This is what I'm saying. You know, it's very nice to have Roisin on last week. I very much enjoyed it. The question really that I have for you is who are you going to get to replace me next week when I am at D23 in LA? You know, so we've raised the bar, haven't we? We've raised the bar for Roisin. So we need to raise it surely yet again. So Boyd, who will you pull out of your... Will it be Al Pacino, for example? You know, Tom Cruise? Who can possibly...
The annoying thing is, as I think we were about to announce, actually, is that we have secured one of my celebrity friends as our special guest on our live forthcoming Pilot TV podcast in September. So we can't have him for a start. I mean, if he was available, I don't know. But so it's difficult. Yeah, I don't know. And yeah.
Do you think we'll exhaust your Rolodex quite quickly if we keep doing
this? We might do, yeah.
Dermot. I'm going to do a pitch.
Do you want to pitch for Dermot?
Right now for Dermot. Dermot has great hair, really good dance moves. He's really funny. I really like his trousers. And he knows his telly.
He does know his telly. You're right. That's a good suggestion. Okay. I'm on Dermot.
Project Dermot. James Corden, get him to fly back. You know, he could fill in for me. Ant or deck, whichever you like.
Yeah. When you say Ant and deck. Make him sound like a character in The Expanse.
Yeah, Antandek. The character Antandek.
Yeah. I'm going to start with Dermot, actually. Yeah. Yeah. You've inspired me.
Yeah. Roisin didn't swear at me as much as you do. She was nicer to me.
I'm Hang on. To be fair, the last three or four podcasts, I've worked so hard to be nice to you. And then it always kind of unravels when you do something really irritating.
That seems fair. There was I do heartily recommend you listen to her the Funny or Die segment from last week when she schooled me at length on my failings in that area, which was fun.
And it was about time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably should be the end of Funny or Die, to be honest. Once you've got one of the funniest people in the country who has made a sitcom, which has been a brilliant success, and she spends, I don't know, 20 minutes explaining to you why TV comedy is such a brilliant genre. Mm. It's over then, isn't it? It's like, that should be the climax of it. That's the perfect season finale.
We'll see later on in the show, won't we? What is it with the two of you trying to kill our regulars? We'd have no podcast. Terry's after Banshee, you're after the other one. You know, shall I get rid of news?
Our regulars, i.e. things that revolve around James, that he came up with, inserted into the podcast and gave us no say on.
Point of order, Boyd came up with Funny or Die.
Yeah, but I didn't advocate actually doing it.
You did. No, it was your idea. You came up with it on the show.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but it was your fault.
As most things are. I'm just saying.
We'll see if we can do Dermot or Dyer next week.
Yeah.
Funny or Dermot.
Fine. Terry, you're off on holiday. What were you watching? What have you watched? What have you seen?
So, I have gone full Downton obsessed. So I am almost at the end of season 5. I watched an entire season while in Sicily, because what else would you be doing with your time in the evening on a solo holiday in Sicily than lying in a dark room watching Downton Abbey? I felt all of the feelings. What a roller coaster. I watched 6 more episodes this weekend. Like, there is a lot of Downton in my life at the moment. And then last night I watched 4 more episodes of Euphoria.
Oh, wow.
Yes, which is just... And you were so right about the carnival episode.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Some of those... There's an opening tracking one shot, which is one of the most ambitious single shots I've ever seen in television. Yeah. It's remarkable. Yeah, that whole thing, I don't even know how they coordinated it.
Yeah,
you have
incredible.
Not got into Euphoria yet, and the whole thing is on Sky on their catch-up. Please watch. It's just remarkable. And we raved about that first episode, right?
Yeah.
And Boyd had watched a few more, but... It just builds on that whole thing. It's such brilliant, brilliant telly. So they're quite at the opposite ends of the extreme, I suppose, really.
Mm. They are.
I watched 3 episodes of Downton yesterday and then got in bed and watched
how many have you got left? How many Downtons? Are you near the end? You must be right near the end.
Season 5?
Yeah.
And
that's it? You're done?
I know. Don't tell me that because I'm not ready. I'm not ready to say goodbye.
How did you feel when Cousin Matthew...
I mean, how did I feel about any of it? Like, Edith just breaking my heart.
Oh, Edith. You love Edith,
like,
don't you?
I am so here for Edith, and Mary can go fuck herself, quite frankly.
Fair. That's fair.
But, oh, my God, it's like, it's just every time I think I've got a handle on it. And then, did people really drop dead that often in those days? Because,
apparently.
Fuck me, it's like, they've all got the number of dead husbands, spouses, fiancés, children between them is remarkable.
Do you know what? I'd forgotten there's a whole sequence where they go to war and it's Downton in the trenches. I'd forgotten all about that.
It's bonkers. But, oh, my God, it's so well done.
Yeah.
Oh,
how excited are you about the film, which is incoming?
Oh, God, I'm so excited. And bearing in mind that before this, you kept going on about us covering this film and I kept saying something along the lines of Over My Dead Body. and in a classic Terry White fashion, I've done a complete 360 and now I can't wait.
Or a 180.
What is a 360?
We'll be basically pointing the way you were originally. You've just done a circle.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm very glad that I've converted you to Downton Abbey. Obviously, once you've finished Downton, I will furnish you with some Farscape episodes so you can replace Downton with Farscape, and slowly but surely you will become me.
Fire Escape is never going to happen.
You promised you'd watch an episode.
I know, but I think Downton's an aberration for you. Like, there is nothing about you that says Downton Abbey. It's the little weirdness at the heart of James Dyer, so I don't think it's indicative. Fire Escape is you to a fucking tee.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Boy, what have you been watching?
I have been watching. We couldn't watch it last week, as discussed in the
illicitly uploaded.
Yes, the famous unedited, not for publication podcast, where we were discussing how, with certain series, Netflix won't give us advance screeners so we can watch it in advance and review it like we do with shows on this podcast.
We've got another one this week.
Yeah, exactly. So, Mindhunter. I have been watching, which arrived properly on Netflix on Friday, season two. And this was a show that I loved season one. I'm a huge David Fincher fan. He's my favourite director in the whole wide world. And I was annoyed that we weren't allowed to see. And I still don't really know why, by the way, because now I've watched season two. I spent all weekend watching it when I wasn't writing a thing. And it's even better than season one.
Wasn't it spoilers?
But we knew a lot of the stuff that was happening.
I thought that was the David Fincher concern.
I think that was the line they
That was the line they used. But it's less spoilery than you know. I mean, it's not that kind of show, really.
No, it's not.
It's about psychology and character. And a lot of it is people chatting. I mean, practically all of it is, frankly, is people chatting in rooms. They might be prison rooms sometimes, and there might be serial killers. But a lot of the time, they're FBI agents chatting shit to each other in the bar. There's some brilliant bar scenes in the first couple of episodes. And Anna Torv, as the third main character, along with the two dudes who do the investigation, she's their kind of sounding board, and she is phenomenal. I mean, she was brilliant in season one, but she really comes to the fore. Yeah, she was brilliant.
She was great in Fringe.
Yeah. So she really comes to the fore. There's an amazing scene, a couple of scenes in the bar where she's looking at this girl behind the bar because she fancies her, and it's so brilliantly done. I don't think I've ever seen where you notice someone you fancy someone and you're kind of like thinking, what am I going to do about that, whilst having this really important conversation with her colleagues about what to do about the serial killers. It's absolutely brilliant. It's so authentic, and the texture of it feels so real, and yet at the same time they're showing this appalling, terrible stuff. And there's actually a few kind of almost slightly cheesy plot contrivances that go on in this season, but David Fincher pulls it off so well, and the writing is incredible. It's just a fucking brilliant show.
Yeah, I've started it. I watched the first one, and there was a part where I was like, it's been a while, I couldn't remember. And I watched Mindhunter, I enjoyed it.
It was a good catch-up. I didn't watch the catch-up.
I should have watched the catch-up.
Yeah,
like, I'd forgotten there was an investigation and stuff, and they were in trouble. Yeah. I'd forgotten all about that. And I thought, oh, tell you what I'll do. I'll watch the first one and then I'll do it. But I got to the end of it. I was like, and I've remembered, it's very slow and not a lot happens, but these characters are amazing and they just suck you in.
Yeah.
And they're fascinating. Yeah.
I'm absolutely
going to plow through this.
You're right. It's an incredible trick how it's quite slow. And, you know, you were banging on about how Succession is slow, which it totally isn't. This kind of is slow. The pace of it
They're not bellends, though, in this one.
Because they spend so much time talking to each other about stuff that often is not very important.
Mm.
And yet it's so compelling. It's weird. It's like a magic trick.
Mm.
I don't know how he does. It's a bit like, remember, Zodiac was quite kind of slow. I don't think
very
slow.
Good, though.
Zodiac is the thing that this is most like in all of David Fincher's oeuvre. And it's like you're watching special bonus episodes of Zodiac, which is a fucking brilliant film, playing out, you know. And then I've got to the episodes 4 and 5 that aren't directed by him, and they're equally fantastic as well. So it's just incredible. It really is like, you know, proper peak TV. We're watching these incredible talents, these you know, huge artistic fucking geniuses making TV shows.
And we get 10 hours of it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Incredible.
So other than that, what have I watched? Oh, so I didn't watch, but I read the plot synopsis for the finale of Handmaid's Tale Season 3. So that was, you know, close enough. I thought, I'm not going to watch this.
Not the same as watching it,
no.
right?
Just so I read because everyone was talking about it. So I read the synopsis to see what was happening, and it still seems quite miserable.
Why didn't you just
Because then
it.
I'd need to have watched the preceding however many, 11
but
episodes.
How did the synopsis make sense to you?
No, I read all the synopses for the whole season.
Oh, Jesus.
Just so I now know all about season 3. Because remember, when we reviewed the beginning of season 3, I had not watched season 2, so I read the synopses of season 2. So now I've read the synopses of season 3. So I think this is now me on The Handmaid's Tale. Now I'm just going to be a synopses binger, and that's how I will know what happened.
God, that's depressing.
Yeah, that is indicative of I don't know, something.
Yeah.
Synopsis reading is now taking the place of actual TV
watching. Yeah.
Matt's
didn't help that I kept getting confused with whose name was whose.
Oh, well, they changed. Yeah.
No, but I just couldn't remember. I was like, who's that, Lawrence? Oh, yes, right. Yes, that's Bradley Whitford. Right. So, yeah. But what I did watch, which I said I would watch, was I watched the very first episode of This Life.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes,
In which Andrew Lincoln is about 12 years old.
Yeah.
And that is very, very weird. It's good. It was good. I enjoyed it. It took me a little while to get into it. I'm gonna press on with it. Yeah, I'm gonna continue with this. It might be my Downton. So I'm gonna keep on watching this. I enjoyed the characters to a point.
What did you think of Anna?
Which one's Anna?
Scottish.
I found her a little irritating.
I knew it.
Yeah. Were you scared of her?
Was this a thing? Was I not going to like Anna?
She's like, oh yeah. I mean, she's complicated and difficult and quite aggressive and sexually really in control of herself. So yeah, I thought you would have issues with that.
Right. Okay. Well, but I didn't. I found her quite annoying and slightly erratic. But then I found like, but Jack Davenport.
Erratic. Classic. Erratic. Yeah.
But doesn't like, but she comes. There is a point where she comes
up. Hot mess. Is she a hot mess? Oh no, she's probably not hot enough to be a hot mess, is she, James?
She comes up at one point and shouts at Jack Davenport for it's unclear what reason. And it's like, what? And he's just like, what is going on? Then he's an idiot as well, so that's all fine. And then Egg and, is it Millie?
Yeah, Millie.
Egg and Millie, insufferably smug, but I quite enjoyed, you know, they were quite fun.
Millie's your cup of tea.
You think? Yeah, she was good. But then someone said on Twitter, said, when you watch a show, you will wonder why she is not a bigger star than she is. Because people seem to think she's the best thing in it. So, but yeah, it's really well written. Like, it was really fun. But it's just, again, you're watching it, this is so old. Like, I feel old watching this. This looks, like, everything about it just screams, you know, its era. But I know, that was, you know, good. This life.
Keep going. It's all about their relationships and their dynamics and how they shift and evolve. So you really have to, like, have watched a few to start to appreciate it properly.
It's funny, though, like, looking at a show like this, which portrays British law firms, and it looks like a, you know, a job seeker's office, and then you watch Suits, and there's like the American vision of what a law firm is, and then the English vision of what a law firm is very, very different.
Yeah.
But, yeah. All right. So that was what we were watching. Time now for Funny or Die, while it's still with us, otherwise known as James versus Comedy. Although, I will say, after being soundly schooled on humour by Roisin last week, I may have had a Damascene conversion.
To what? Comedy?
To comedy generally. I feel she may have awakened something within me. I laughed.
You said that like, Welsh, you went a bit worse. Awakened.
Awakened. I laughed, I think, three times in the first 5 minutes of not the Funny or Die, but of something else this week, which we'll get to.
Okay.
So perhaps that's it. I'm fixed. I'm cured.
Well, did you laugh at Green Wing?
Well, let's put it to the test with this. So this was Graham Wells' suggestion of Green Wing, Series 1, Episode 8, The Slave Auction, and not, as I said last week on the podcast, The Space Auction. Although, frankly, that sounds much more like my sort of thing.
Yeah.
So this was an odd one. I think what threw me most about this is it's 50 minutes long.
Yeah.
And that...
I forgot that, yeah. I did forget that.
Blindsided me. Because, like, this is a wacky comedy, and wacky comedies are not 50 minutes long. Like, this is an aberration. Also, they shouldn't be. Like, they're not this long for a reason. And my main takeaway from this is I just wrote too long, too fucking long. Like, 50 minutes, too long for a comedy. That said, I did laugh. And I laughed very early on when there's a guy who's been, Tamsin Gregg has maced him, essentially, and he's getting his eyes done, and she's swabbing his eyes, and then she puts a swab on Stephen Mangan, and he's like, oh, that's blind man swab. For some reason, that made me laugh. The bit where they're having a boardroom meeting, and the guy who's like the head of radiology, whatever it is, gets entangled in a bag, and then while ducking someone, like, headbutts the desk, which is classic slapstick. For some reason, that made me laugh, although it really shouldn't have done. And Olivia Colman, I thought, was great. Like, she, I thought, was fantastic. She was really charming, and there's a bit when they have Patterson Joseph judging people's photocopied asses, and he picks hers, and she's dancing around behind him, and that made me laugh as well. So I thought, oh, I'm really enjoying this. And then we got past the half hour mark, and it's drastically outstayed its welcome. And I got, by that point, I was like, okay, like, I was with this early on, and I laughed, and it was fun, and now I'm bored. And it carried on going, and I felt like the actual sort of narrative arc of this episode was quite tight, it was quite neat, it was a nice idea, it's been done on many other shows before, but I feel it fits into a 23-minute slot, and I don't think it stretches over 50 minutes. And there were moments where, weirdly, the main issue I had was Michelle Gomez. So... She seemed to embody the stupider, more extreme parts of the humour in this. There's a bit where she's got comedy long arms.
That made me laugh so much.
And I just thought...
It's really so funny. Surreal.
No, but that's it. I was like, is this a bit... Like, is her character consciously using fake arms, or is this... something that's happening within the context? Like, is she supposed to... I couldn't work out what was supposed to be real and what was supposed to be the characters within it doing something stupid. And then she's wearing a beard with a crossbow and tries to murder someone.
Oh,
and
I'm love like, that stuff.
This is nonsense.
I know, but that's for me what marks it out from just being your kind of run-of-the-mill British sitcom comedy, right?
The extreme.
Is the surreal stuff.
Yes.
Is fucking nuts. And I loved it. And I forgot it. I haven't watched this since it first aired. And... I laughed at it. I mean, the whole thing with Stephen Mangan when he was trying to prove he knows working class people and they talk to the
cleaners. That was funny.
That whole set piece was just brilliant. He's like, ends up like, go off and do something menial. He can't remember his name. It's that, I found that really funny. But the surreal stuff for me is the stuff that I'd completely forgotten about and really made me laugh. The stuff with the long arms, I was like dying.
How was that funny?
Oh, it was so funny.
Oh, it was really funny. I
love the surreal stuff.
Yeah.
It lifts it.
Didn't get it.
It makes That's what makes it special, because I totally forgotten the form of this show, which was unique. So I know what you're saying about the length of it is right, but that's part of the whole kind of idea of it. It was this freewheeling, freeform thing about the setting of a hospital, and we're going to let anything can happen. And so, you know, these kind of moments of surrealism that dot it throughout kind of give it this very unpredictable quality to it, that at the same time you're going to have really kind of quite realist moments, you know, where the nurses and doctors interact and all of that. And that is, and because Victoria Pyle, who created it, she did the same thing. Did you ever see Campus? So that was her follow-up series was Campus a few years later, which was also on Channel 4, and it was also this long. And people were still like, why are you making these comedies that are like an hour long on TV? And she did the same thing again. That was a university set thing. So it's a similar idea of this, of the, you know, where students and
teachers...
And that was surreal in the same way. It was her thing. And I think, by and large, I think she pulled it off, because even though it was for you, I wasn't bored. I was always entertained. So I think
I wonder whether it was just, I found it, I didn't understand why it was still going.
Weird.
It was like,
does not compute. Yeah.
It really freaked me out.
Yeah.
And then, but also, like, I think the surrealism, as you know, like, I sometimes have a problem where there's a relatability, believability barrier between me and the show that I'm watching. And I couldn't, the surrealism, again, it just bumped up against, I was like, this isn't real. This doesn't make sense. Does not compute. Did not like it. So this is more of me failing, but I don't need to tell you that. But also, it was quite crass. And I think when it got quite crass, it also lost me there as well. So like when they get to the slave auction, there's the dating bit. When Michelle Gomez is talking, she's saying like really lewd things to the guy when she's typing the computer. I'm like, I don't like this kind of humour. And I just think that I thought, it's got excessively stupid at this point, and therefore it's gone outside my chosen arena. So I don't think I enjoyed that bit as much. I did quite enjoy, at one point, you know, when... again, don't know what the character's name is, when he goes out for dinner with Tamsin Gregg and he's trying to neg her. He does a negging dinner. And there's this one bit where, because he's being like, obviously taking it to the nth degree, like he's being incredibly rude. And at one point she says, because I'm not sure I'm really enjoying this. And he just goes, fuck off. That made me laugh, because the absurdity of taking the idea of being a bit of a bastard to make someone interested to that extreme, I found that quite funny. And then he tries to pass it off as some weird hypnotism thing. So, yeah, like, genuinely well-written, great performances, people in it really funny, and loads of really great people in it as well. So clearly very good, but I think the length plus crass surrealism maybe did it in for me. So it's probably not going to become a firm favourite of mine, but I did laugh.
It's just, I love the lack of structure in many places and the fact that it shifts between something that feels very tightly structured to being more like improv almost. It's so random and weird. I'm with you on the length. I had the same, when I loaded this up, I was like, it's 53 minutes. There must be some kind of mistake. But I think that's to do with our diet of TV comedy, which is, you know, 23, 27 minutes. Mm. And that's kind of what we've been trained to watch. Because I think Paul's right. There was no point where I thought I found my attention wandering. But it feels suddenly like an insurmountable amount of time, because you're used to it with dramas, with bigger arcs.
Yeah, I think they were trying to go for kind of Ally McBeal style thing. Because Ally McBeal was essentially a comedy was of that length.
And that was surrealist.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wonder whether the difference, I think maybe what we've come to expect from the traditional sitcom format is trivia. Like the plots of sitcoms tend to be quite incidental. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like it's funny jokes and writings and comedy situations, but the actual story is slightly disposable. Whereas, and you're used to tolerating that over sort of 20 odd minutes. Whereas when you take that over to an hour, I think sometimes you possibly want, like, because Ally McBeal plots were sometimes quite involved, you know, there was a lot going on because it was semi-dramatic. I think maybe for an hour you need slightly more stuff. But then what Rasheen was saying last week was that she doesn't do pure comedy, it's drama with comedy in it. So like Game Face, for example, does have a narrative structure to it, and Fleabag as well is another one where you could happily watch an hour long Fleabag, it wouldn't be a problem at all. Whereas I think something like Friends or Seinfeld or some of that, you stretch that over an hour and you're just like, whew,
of course.
Killing me here.
Although, having said that, some of the episodes of Seinfeld were an hour long and they were fucking brilliant.
Of course they were, boys. Anyway, so that was Green Wing. Boyd apparently wants to kill this segment. So are we going to have to do a hashtag say funny or die?
You do what you want. I mean, I'm just floating.
I am more than happy to end this segment if it is the will of the listeners.
I think the listeners probably want to keep it. I think they seem to, you know.
All right,
they're still coming up with suggestions. That's all I'd say.
I will set up a Twitter poll for a kill or keep this segment. So if you go to my Twitter at James C. Dyer, you will see it there and vote. And that will determine whether or not we do another one. If we do another one, I can tell you what it's going to be. If we do another one, it's going to be Father Ted. Because on the Empire podcast last week, we were discussing the fact that I've never watched Father Ted. And someone was like, how has this never made Funny or Dire? So I was like, okay, give us one. So a few people came in and said, specifically John Salmon, who's the one I picked, said, Father Ted, Series 2, Episode 5, A Song for Europe, which is the Eurovision comedy Father Ted.
Oh, yeah.
Never seen it. Don't know anything about it. If this segment survives to another podcast, then that's the next one we'll do. But it won't be next week.
You know it's Graham Linehan again.
I do. Yeah. Well, we're not going to.
I'm just saying.
We're not going to start transgender issues.
I didn't mean that like that. I didn't mean that. I meant you don't know anything about it. You watch the IT Crowd.
Yes.
You know something of the tone.
And I'm a big fan of Black Books.
Right.
But I've never watched Father Ted. Although Chris Hewitt and Helen O'Hara from this parish have over the years subjected me to a number of Father Ted skits reenacted. Mm. Something maybe about close and far away.
Maybe they'll do that on the Empire live podcast tour.
And a spider baby. I know about a spider baby. Is it a spider baby? Is that a thing?
I think so, yeah.
Body of a spider and the head of a baby. I don't know. Helen used to do it. Anyway, we're digressing. So that was possibly the last Funny or Die. Should we go on to news?
Yeah.
First bit of news for this week. It was alluded to earlier, but the first bit of news for this week, we should say, is that we are going to have a guest at the first ever live pilot podcast, which is happening in September. That is right. Boyd, would you like to share with us who you're bringing along to the live show?
Start of a being human, looking years and years and many, many more. The great, the one and only, the glorious Russell Tovey.
Boyd's close personal friend Russell Tovey will be joining us.
I mean,
for the podcast
in a professional capacity.
Well, you know what's going to happen? We're going to interview him, and we're just going to ask him what it's like to be friends with you. Tell us.
Let's be professional. Let's try to maintain some level of dignity here.
Tell us about Boyd. You know,
yeah.
Who is the real Boyd Hilton? That's what we'll ask him.
What's the most personal detail you know about Boyd Hilton?
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Okay.
It's going to be great. We're going to love it. So Russell will be joining us for the live show, which, as we said, is on Friday the 13th of September at the London Podcast Festival. You can book tickets now at kingsplace.co.uk, so please do so, and you'll see us all live.
What time are we doing it?
I believe it's at 9 o'clock.
Okay,
9 o'clock of the PM. Yeah,
it's quite late, isn't it?
See, that time.
Some would say we're in the graveyard shift. Others would say we are headlining Friday night. So everyone else, including Mark Kermode, is a supporting act, and we are headlining.
Yeah,
that's how I choose to see it.
Yeah, Kermode doesn't got Russell Tovey.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't have Russell Tovey.
That's what I'm aware.
Yeah. So buy a ticket for the pilot one on Friday and buy a ticket for the Empire one on Saturday, which Terry and I will be at as well.
How much are tickets, James?
They are money. And they are money pounds. And I don't know. I haven't a first clue. Oh. But I don't think they're very expensive. Like, they're quite cheap. And I think you get a deal if you buy more than one. So if you bought a pilot ticket and an Empire ticket, you would make money savings.
Don't you have to buy three?
Sure. but you could buy one that isn't by Mark Kermode.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a rule. You can buy three, but one of them cannot be by Kermode.
Because he's on the same time as us.
Because he's on the same time as us.
Not because you're on the against him.
Just to be clear, it's because he's the competition.
Yeah.
But as I've said before, I plan to ambush him in the green room.
Actually, Russell's, I think they're doing Talk Art a lot, which is his does an art podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Who had Lena Dunham on recently, which is fucking brilliant, by the way. And so I would suggest that.
Okay.
If you want to
fine. So it's a triple bill.
Yeah.
Russell's podcast.
Yeah.
Our podcast with Russell. And then Empire's podcast with us. See, it's all connected.
Exactly.
All connected. Anyway, any other news?
Yes. So Ben Wheatley has announced that he's directing a zombie pensioner TV satire about divided Britain for Channel 4. So, I mean, this is possibly the most Ben Wheatley thing ever. it sounds pretty much amazing. It's a six-parter, and it's about the intergenerational divides, which we've seen with Brexit, the kind of civil war that they're calling has erupted within the country. There was an amazing quote from, I think, the producer of the show, who said, our heroes need to take on the old flesh-eating zombies who have stolen the resources, and finally, the flesh of the young.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's not the most subtle metaphor, potentially. But that sounds super, super exciting, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm down for that.
It's Ben fucking Wheatley.
Ben fucking Wheatley.
Absolutely.
It's called Generation Z.
Yeah.
Or Z, I guess, if you're in America.
Well, but we're not.
No, we're not. But I thought there was already a show called Generation Z, but I must be wrong. Am I wrong?
Of course,
I haven't looked it up.
No, there was the zombie one.
Yeah.
No, it's a Z Nation. You're thinking of Z Nation.
I am thinking of Z Nation. Mm. Thank you. Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly exciting, isn't it? I mean, Ben Wheatley writing and directing.
Yeah.
Zombies, satire, TV. I mean, what are you doing, James? Why are you gone silent?
I'm basically. So
are you thinking?
It's possible I didn't get a chance to look at news.
So
I'm looking at it now.
That surprises
live
no one
on the internet. And I've discovered, for example, that Abby Quinn will be starring as Mabel in the original in the revival of Mad About You.
Are you talking about something that's completely different now? We moved on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I've moved on to another story.
He was distracted, by our talk of...
Did you watch Mad About You, Boyd?
Yes, I did.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did.
Did you like Murray the dog?
I did like Murray the dog,
good.
Yeah.
Terry, you didn't watch Mad About You,
nope.
Did you? No, I love Mad About You. It was really, really good.
Mad About You, I think, was a worldwide pants production, wasn't it? It was David Letterman's production company.
Oh, was it? Yeah, I didn't know that. I know
It was the pre. It was kind of like it would be on before or after Seinfeld, one of the two.
But Friends is part of the Mad About You TVU, so the MAY TVU. Yeah. So they have a shared universe because Phoebe's sister Ursula is a character in Mad About You.
Yeah.
But Mad About You is coming back, which means that Helen Hunt and Paul Reiser will return, and apparently Abby Quinn, who's going to play Mabel.
That's nice.
Yeah. There you go.
But not as exciting as the
as the other thing, as obviously.
Yeah.
Gormenghast. Were we excited about Gormenghast?
I am. Gormenghast, the first book of Gormenghast. There's a trilogy? Yeah, the trilogy is one of my favourite books.
No, is it?
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. It's much better than Lord of the Rings. But I do really fucking love Gormenghast. And there's been attempts to do it before. BBC did a kind of, I think they might have done it twice, actually. And they never really had the budget. It's such a, it's a very outlandish kind of big world building. It has a lot of things in common with Lord of the Rings, but it is better, as I say. So it needs that kind of budget and this kind of approach that will, I'm assuming, now happen.
Okay.
Because who's making it?
I forget.
Yeah, same.
Let me have a look. No, I'm going to find out for you. Showtime.
Right. You're immediately like, that is going to be a big budget, you know, high production values. And that's very important when you're making a Gormenghast show.
Yeah, no, I've never read it. Don't know a great deal about it.
You'd love it.
Oh, yeah. It feels like it's definitely a me thing. Like, I'm very excited about Carnival Row that's coming, despite the fact that I worry that's not going to be great. But nevertheless, it might be. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. It's got fairies in it and you know.
Yes, mystical creatures. We will be reviewing it in next week's podcast.
Oh, that's right. I won't be here for Carnival Row.
No, you twat.
That's really disappointing.
Yeah.
Oh, well, never mind.
James, how have you not mentioned the Obi-Wan?
Oh, yes.
Rumours.
Yes, the Obi-Wan show. So Ewan McGregor reprising his role as Obi-Wan
Kenobi
for Disney Plus.
Reportedly, maybe.
That's happening,
I think,
say.
We are going to see him at D23. Or you are
going to see him. Later this week when I encounter him in the flesh. Yes, that may happen. And presumably
are you
they'll
excited?
Do the big... I'm pretty excited, yes. So I'm excited, obviously, to see Rise of Skywalker stuff. But, you know, they'll show me some Mandalorian. You know, I'll see, you know, maybe some Loki, some, you know, some Falcon and Winter Soldier stuff. All the Disney Plus stuff will be there. Mm. And I'm sure there'll be like a live action, I don't know, pick a shit Disney film. Like one The Rescuers. There'll probably be a live action The Rescuers announced.
That's a good example. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought of The Rescuers.
It's gonna happen. Well, they're doing the Aristocats, aren't they?
Oh, Jesus.
That's the thing.
They're doing Lady and the Tramp.
Oh, maybe it's that. Yeah, is it that? No, it's Lady and the Tramp, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's Lady and the Tramp.
The one where they eat spaghetti together is Lady and the Tramp.
Yes, so they're doing that one. But yes, so Ewan McGregor. Yes. So this is an interesting one because McGregor has said a number of times he'd quite like to go back to that role. It's interesting because the last time we saw, or I should say heard, Ewan was in The Force Awakens. They use a line of his dialogue during the Force back sequence when Rey has a vision, and there's a line from Ewan McGregor in there that he recorded. But that's the last thing he did. Other than that, it was Revenge of the Sith.
the last thing he did ever.
As Obi-Wan, that's the last thing that he did. And the only thing he's done since Revenge of the Sith. So, I am interested to see it. See if he brings Hayden Christensen back as well as Anakin. No? Seems doubtful.
No need for
seems
that.
Seems doubtful. Okay.
Have either of you seen the film Skate Kitchen?
No.
The US indie
I have not.
Film.
About the girl.
Girls. Yeah. It was great. And HBO's doing a series.
Oh, wow. Yeah. On the same girls?
Same girl. So it's the same cast and the same creators. It's called Betty, the series. It's not quite clear whether they're the same characters or not. But, I mean, it's literally the people in that show and the people who created that film are making a half-hour comedy series set in the world of skater girl culture. And I think it's a really good idea because I love that film. I mean, I love skater culture. HBO will do an amazing job. Yeah.
I want to talk about something on ITV and really annoy James.
Yeah, okay. Good.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yes.
Which just, right, it doesn't sound like something that we'd want to talk about. James is already squinting. So, does everyone remember the cheating scandal, early noughties?
No.
So there was a guy on it, Major Charles Ingram, and his wife and a friend of theirs were sat in the audience, and I think they won $1 million, right?
Was this the coughing thing?
Yes, the coughing thing. And they were eventually found guilty of this, and they had to pay a massive fine and were on probation. But essentially, she coughed at certain points to give him a clue to the answers, and they ended up winning a fuck ton of money. but this is going to be directed. It's a three-parter coming onto ITV. And it's directed by Stephen Frears, which is really exciting. Obviously, a very English scandal, the Queen. Matthew McFadden is going to be Major Charles Ingram, which I just can't get my head around their faces being like the same person. But most excitingly for me is Sean Clifford from Fleabag is going to play wife, Diana. And Michael Sheen is going to play Chris Tarrant.
Yeah, no, I can't get my head around that. That is demented, isn't it? Yes. Obviously, Michael Sheen kind of specialised in playing real people. Yeah. He played Tony Blair a few times. He played Brian Clough, the legendary football manager, all kinds of real people. But I don't see him as Chris Tarrant at all. What? And the other thing is, Chris Tarrant has such a kind of weird, unique way of talking. Like, Chris Tarrant.
Not like that.
I'm intrigued as to how is, yeah.
Would it be weird to get Chris Tarrant to be Chris Tarrant?
Yes. In a fictionalised thing where everybody else is played by actors.
No, they
right?
do it. You know, Mission Impossible use Wolf Blitzer, don't they? You know, there is crossover.
It's always weird when you've got somebody so recognisable. Unless you're right, when he was Blair, he was so brilliant at Blair that you never even thought that he wasn't. Mm. But like you, I'm like, how do you become Chris Tarrant?
I bet he will. He's a chameleon.
Who also looks very specific.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We'd have like a blonde wig on, like with
You'd
that particular.
To.
Who knows? Yeah, I mean, who knows? It is intriguing. This was originally a stage play.
It's been adapted for the screen by the same writer of the stage play.
Exactly, and so it is a proper. It's the thing I actually kind of love, which is where you take a kind of pop culture moment and you turn it into kind of proper quality, in depth TV drama. I think it is a really exciting project. Yeah.
James is never going to watch it.
No, I'm absolutely not. But I've never watched.
Well, you will because we're going to review it on this fucking podcast.
I've never watched Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Well, you don't have to have watched that.
Oh my God, what are you talking about? Oh, this is classic. Oh, this is classic James Dyer.
Yeah.
The pop culture phenomenon of that show exists over here. This is a separate piece of culture. Which was a stage play that is in a different kind of part of the cultural
matrix. The problem you have
than that.
Is that this, as a TV show, is contaminated with the lurgy of reality TV because that's what's based on.
Hang on, I've got a point to make to you about this, right? Which is, and I should have mentioned this earlier in what we've been watching. I've watched the two parts so far of the Jade Goody Changed Britain Channel 4 documentary, and this is like classic James Dyer because you would never watch it because Jade Goody is a reality show and Big Brother, etc., etc. It is such a brilliantly made documentary series, and it is a documentary in every kind of brilliantly prestigious meaning of that word. It is so expertly, precisely done, and it's brilliant. And when I was watching it, I was like, James Dye would be rolling his eyes right now if he was here.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I'd be quite interested if Jamie Graham, for it is he who's writing the quiz the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire series, if he did a Big Brother, if he did like a Jade, yeah, that kind of thing, a Jade Big Brother. That's the story to tell there. I'm sure that kind of, you know, someone could do that, and just to annoy James Dyer as well.
I'll be off that week.
I'm not sure if Stephen Frears will be on board though. Of course, Stephen Frears, who I do love, who did do a brilliant job on A Very English Scandal, of which this feels like it's got similar DNA. But did fall asleep in an on-stage Q&A on the BAFTA.
There is photographic evidence.
Yeah, people were there, witnessed it. Yeah, he sat at the end of a sofa and fell asleep.
That's impressive. I've never had someone fall asleep during an interview with me before.
No, me neither.
But that's impressive.
Yeah, there was a moment.
I have a last news story. If no one has anyone else, which is a slightly odd one. So Friends is heading to the cinema. Not that they're making a movie of it, but for its 25th anniversary, they are remastering Friends in 4K and theatrically screening the 12, quote-unquote, most memorable episodes.
In the UK?
No, probably just in the US. But
James!
No. There's someone again. I'm bringing this up because I think it's interesting to discuss the ones they chose as the 12 most memorable episodes of Friends.
Who's chosen them?
It doesn't say, presumably Warner Brothers. Or perhaps it was put to a vote. Who knows? Who knows?
Come on then, give us the top five.
Okay. The pilot.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, that's a cop out. That's fair. I bet they end with the... Oh, no, they don't have the last one in there. Fair enough.
That's just stupid.
Now, number two, although it's not listed. It's not ranked. That's the word. Well done. Thank you, Terry. It's not ranked. It is listed. It is not ranked. Right.
It's a list.
The one with the blackout, which may be my favourite.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's a really
Chandler
good one.
Where Chandler gets locked in the bank.
Yeah, with Jill Goodacre and Paolo. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's great. It's great. The one with the birth.
Rachel's birth.
I can only assume.
Or Phoebe's birth.
The 23rd episode of season one. So, no, it'd be Ben's birth.
These are rubbish. Where's the prom video? The prom video is the greatest
episode of all time. Hang on. The one where Ross finds out...
Yeah. Finds out what?
Well, this is the one that where he finds
where
out
that Rachel, when she leaves in the voicemail.
It's a seven episode season two, yes. So it's that one, yeah. So the one where
Ross
finds out.
That's what we call closure.
The one with the prom video.
Yes.
Hey.
The greatest
Which is
episode
genius.
Ever.
When he's sitting there in that wig and moustache playing Axel F on his keyboard, it is one of the greatest moments of television.
He's a lobster.
The one where no one's ready, which is the second episode of season three.
Where Ross was going to drink the fat to say sorry to Rachel for shouting at her for not being ready for his gala benefit at the museum. Yeah. It's a great episode. That entire episode is that entire setup.
It's good. It's very good. And they stop him drinking it, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Spoiler.
You are going to drink the fat.
The one with the morning after. Which is season three as well. And I can't remember what that is.
Is that Monica and Chandler?
That's later, though. That's when they're in England, isn't it? That's not season three.
That is season three.
It's not. It can't be season three. That's much later, isn't it? Because they shag quite late on, relatively speaking. It's got to be like, what, five, six?
The morning after.
The one with the morning after. All right, someone Google that. The one with the embryos is the next one, which is from season four.
Oh, no, embryo. Yeah, that is Phoebe. Phoebe being pregnant with Frank's baby.
The one with Chandler in a box, which is genuinely funny, isn't it?
When he smokes his girlfriend.
Exactly, and he's doing penance and he stays in a box. That's a good one. The one with Ross's wedding part two.
The one with the morning after, obviously, is the morning after when Ross sleeps with Chloe, the girl from the Xerox.
We were on a break thing.
Yeah.
And it's the one where Gunter was like, was I not supposed to? Yes. I do remember that.
Iconic episode.
One with Ross's wedding part two is, I think, the Chandler and Monica one.
Yep.
Because that's in London, isn't it? Where they go around and you see them wandering around like London Bridge buying Union Jack hats and it's just cringed city. The one where everyone finds out from season five. Which is that when they find out that Chandler and Monica are there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get off my sister!
I mean, we don't need to go to see
No, because Terry's reenacting all the episodes for you. Yeah. The one where Ross got high, which is season six. That's the last one.
Is that the one where Chandler moves in with Monica and it turns out that he'd been blaming Chandler for when he got high in his childhood bedroom for years and that's why Monica's parents don't like him. And Ross has to confess that he got high in high school.
Terry, how many times have you watched Friends? I mean, that there's something we're tapping into here, something that we had not known, that you watch this on repeat.
usually daily.
Wow. Because I've watched the first two seasons of Friends, like, many, many times. But after that, I think I've only seen three onwards once.
I've watched them all over and over again. It comforts me. It's my, when I feel anxious, I watch Friends. I often go to sleep with Friends on in the background.
Oh, okay, okay.
Leaving Netflix is one of the worst things that's ever happened to me.
Wow. Surely you have the box set.
No, I'm not you.
And also the box set.
I have streaming platforms.
Yeah, but no, you don't have it on a streaming platform.
I know.
The box set, you have to physically go in and put another disc on if you want just to play throughout the night.
I would also, to this point, like to point out that I literally bought you Downton Abbey for your birthday, and so you watched it on streaming.
Yeah. It was a symbolic gift.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true. It also cost like £1. So, yeah. But still. Right. I guess that was news.
How is there no Mrs. Geller while you cry? When she comes back from Greece.
I mean, where's, you know, the one with George Clooney? Where's the Brad
Mrs.
Pitt one,
Geller,
the Bruce Willis one? All the Paul, the best Paul Rudd episodes aren't in there either.
No.
But, you know, can't have everything. There's a lot of episodes of that show, and they are very good indeed. Anyway, should we move on to reviews?
Yes.
Sure.
Right. First up this week, as we adopt the requisite Brummy accent, is season 4. I'm going to stop that because all of our listeners from Birmingham will be like, make it stop.
Also, let me just say, there's something very, you know, sexy and masculine and, you know, about that Brummy accent in Peaky Blinders. Yeah. And then James does it and it's like, doesn't have quite the same impact.
Right, I can speak with a Birmingham accent.
You are not Cillian Murphy. I think we can all agree.
All right, fair enough. Anyway, so this is, of course, the show, season 5 of the show that made Flat Caps cool again. I refer, of course, to Stephen Knight's Peaky Blinders. Now, if you'll recall, Boyd and Terry, series 4 ended with Thomas Shelby OBE being elected to Parliament, which is something, I'll be honest, I didn't see coming. And series 5 picks up 2 years after the election. But if you think the Shelby Company Limited has left its shadier business interests behind, you are very much mistaken. Terry, you're basically a northern gangster yourself. Was this a documentary for you?
Oh my God. So, a small confession. I've never watched Peaky Blinders.
Whoa.
So nothing about it appeals to me.
Really?
Like, none of the stars, the period stuff grinds my gears, a Birmingham gangster, the whole thing just, like, turns me off massively.
I'm shocked.
So... I watched this for this podcast. I had no clue what was happening, but it didn't matter. It's so brilliant. It's like proper sexy and bombastic and showy. And it's like a bit Brummy Tarantino and American Western. It's so beautifully super stylized, but not at the expense of substance or anything like that. Some of the some of the single shots like were just remarkable.
In the field with the scarecrow.
I mean, holy shit. The cinematography is insane. Some of the slow motion shots, like the craft behind. I mean, I take back every thought and presumption I ever had. It's like a graphic novel almost, like how it looks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I should have known because Nick Cave, obviously. And
yeah, I must
like,
have said, when the second red right hand came on, I mean, you must have been like, oh.
So I can't tell you what happened.
No.
And can I just say so this was the other thing. I was like, Cillian Murphy, we've all seen Cillian Murphy. And I was like, does he have the like imposing physicality and the meta? Oh my God. Like in spades. Like he is... I mean, that voice, I was like, it's not even like it's coming out of his body. He is incredible and so, like, terrifying and seductive and charming and, like, I am all here for Peaky Blinders. And after I finished Downton Abbey, I'm going back to
You
the
really
first
should. Also,
again.
Because I would argue it's like, strongest seasons, I think, were the early ones. Not because these are bad, but I just think in terms of the setup, when they were kind of the scrappy Peaky Blinders gang rather than... with this sort of an air of, this feels like the Godfather Part 3 era of Peaky Blinders.
Oh, no.
No. Boy, see,
I really like
no.
the Godfather 3.
We both
so
love the Godfather
Part 3. No, I like the Godfather Part 3 as well, apart from
But I'm saying there's a veneer of respectability, whereas when they're just on the street slicing people up with razor blades, there's
you
a
mean
whole
more thematically?
Yes, right, that's what I mean. Fine. I don't mean quality-wise.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
But I mean thematically, I think it's more engaging early on, because we're in Series 5 at this point. But I absolutely love this show, and like you, I came to this very late. I came to this, I think, when Series 3 came in, and I mean, it's not a lot to binge it. There aren't that many episodes, but it's really fucking good. It's incredibly well shot. It's beautifully sort of, it just feels really high quality. Mm-hmm. And as you say, I think, Cillian Murphy, like, to be, you know, with the Brummy accent and just that look, because he has those eyes.
Yeah.
But he's terrifying in it. You must have been completely lost. There's even a ghost turns up at one point in this. Figured, you're like, who the fuck are you?
Well, I figured she was a ghost. Yeah. I won't say who it is, but I figured she was a ghost.
To be fair, it's not an actual ghost.
But it's not a ghost.
No, it is.
Oh, it's a figment of his imagination.
Yeah, so he's imagining. Yeah.
But I like that. And I like that. I wasn't expecting that at all. Mm. But I just, it had this like emotional heft, these scenes with his kids. There's a whole thing with a horse that really kind of like knocked the wind out of me.
Tom Hardy is incredible in this when he's in it. Also, Aiden Gillen.
Well, he's not in anymore.
But what I'm saying is when Terry goes back to watch this,
you'll love Tom Hardy. Okay, all right.
But Sam Aiden Neill's Gillen great in the first season. Aiden Gillen as Avarella Gold is brilliant.
Who is still in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so pleased that Terry loved it because I was terrified. because I love Peaky Blinders. I've loved it from the first minute. The very first scene of Peaky Blinders, he rides in on his horse.
Yeah.
And it's a long tracking shot.
It's a callback in this.
Yeah, which is absolutely is callback. So it establishes itself from the very first sequence of this thing that is absolutely not like normal, particularly British TV.
No.
It's so ambitious and it's so huge of scope. But what I can maybe disagree with you about its trajectory. I think it's got better and better and better.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think the more it engages with history and politics, there's that one what it's doing now with Oswald Mosley arriving.
Yeah.
You've got the crash. It begins with the Wall Street crash, and it kind of weaves that in the kind of texture of history so brilliantly. And it just feels like it's got more to say. It feels like it's got more heft now the more it goes on.
Oh, I think that's definitely true.
And they do this brilliant thing. So they've done this brilliant thing that all the way through they get a new director each series, and most of the creative team is new. So I think they get new editors. So I interviewed like the editor and the director of series 3-4, I think, recently, and they're all out, and in comes this new director who this time is Anthony Byrne, and I feel like tacitly they're all given that challenge of outdoing the previous one, because it has become this incredibly visually impressive on a BBC budget. You know, it's extraordinary, isn't it? And it's now gone from BBC Two budget, it's now gone to BBC One. I feel like they've given it more money because it does feel even more spectacular visually. It's always been spectacular, but it now feels, as you say, every shot is beautiful. There's scenes in like a House of Commons, aren't there, which are filmed like, it's like dark, smoky, and it may well have been like that because they're quite keen on their historical accuracy. And I think they might have gone, actually, what was it like to be in the House of Commons in 1929 when it was all these blokes smoking? And, you know, maybe it was quite dark. And so that alone was beautiful. As you say, it's got real emotional depth. The match of style and substance is really brilliantly pulled off. And I thought this first episode was so clever because it wasn't the most action-packed episode. Often they start with, like, season 4 start with a huge big action set piece, effectively, which was incredible. This eases you back in a way and reintroduces you to the characters and what they're doing, picking up 2 years after the last one left off. But it's so gripping anyway. And the catch-up with them was so entertaining. Helen McCrory, brilliant.
The women in this,
incredible.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I think they have a huge input into that. Helen McCrory has a massive input. She, you know, she's talked about this, how she talks to Stephen Knight, who writes every single episode, and they kind of discuss her character, and she is a phenomenal figure in it. The scene that made it for me, I mean, I thought made it even more brilliant than I expected it to be, and I do love the show, is right at the end when he gets interviewed by this journalist from the Times, and it is such a brilliant one-on-one two-hand scene that goes on quite a long time because he's terrifying in it.
He didn't fall asleep.
He didn't fall asleep. Exactly. I like Stephen Frears. And I thought that summed up the show because it's a conversation in a room between two people, but it's incredibly compelling, beautifully filmed, so well acted, and just showed like it's talking about stuff. There's stuff being, you know, it's talking, he's basically going to, you know, I'm not going to reveal what it is. I'm not going to spoil it.
But it's isn't what you think it is going in. Yeah. And it's like, this is very much a fly wandering into a spider's web.
Exactly, so I just think it was brilliant.
Yeah. There's some incredible scenes in it. I mean, we mentioned that the scene in the field with the scarecrow I thought was incredibly powerful. I've watched the first two. I forget which one is episode one and which one is episode two. But yeah, and just to your point, like, I'm not saying in any way that the quality of the show has gone down. And as you say, I think the budget has gone up, the production values have gone up, the quality has gone up, and it is more politically significant and more historically significant at this point. I think I just enjoy that kind of scrappy insurgent vibe. I liked it when they were gangs fighting other gangs and having their heft around, like one of them gets beaten up in a pub, so they go and burn the fucking pub down, you know, by order of the Peaky Blinders. And I very much enjoy the way Cillian Murphy says, Avrama Gold. But but no, this was great. It's Helen McCroy, when she comes back into this, what she's doing and where she is when we begin is amazing. The way they tie it into the stock market crash, the way it does tie into these political events.
The one thing they're quite, I would say, defensive about, as a creative team, all of them, is the violence, right? Because this is a show that has that Tarantino thing about, you know, violence is incredibly visually thrilling and often beautiful. And it's often filmed in super slow motion. And there is a beauty to the way they achieve it. And I feel like, not through any fault of their own, I think like they probably worry that, you know, think pieces are going to be written about how it's glorifying violence, which it doesn't do, because it shows you the real horrible result of violence. But it is brilliantly, brilliantly done. It is Tarantino-esque in the way it deals with it.
But I think it gives that level of violence is shocking and in some ways obscene, but I think it's so powerful in that scene in the pub where you have Arthur and Tommy standing at the bar, and Michael comes in and he's just like, sit down, Michael. And it's like, just the expression on his face, the weight of all that violence that we've seen him commit, just means that the menace that he radiates is so well earned, because you know exactly what he's capable of and the extents to which you'll go to, you know, family or not. Like, he's a terrifying individual, and the violence is what cements that. And I think without that, it would lose some of its potency. So I don't think it's gratuitous at all.
Oh, completely.
And some of the violence that happens in episode two in this is, again, it's quite shocking.
It is shocking,
but it's so powerful.
Especially it's now going to BBC One. It's BBC One, you know, Sunday night.
And, you know, bear in mind, these are guys who have razor blades sewn into the peaks of their flat caps. So it was never going to be, you know, sort of pre-watershed entertainment. But no, this is fantastic. I'm very excited when this is back. And I'm always really sad to see it go, because it's only ever six episodes. And it's, you know, and then you've got to wait years for another one.
Yeah, I think they can't. It's too. You can't make this kind of thing.
Oh, it's so good, though. I will go back and actually rewatch it. Maybe I'll do it with you, Terry. We'll do a synchronized rewatch.
Let's do it together.
There aren't that many of them, so it will be fine. But yeah, that is Peaky Blinders, and I have not written down the air dates of anything this week. So boy, Peaky Blinders is on BBC One.
BBC One Sunday night at 9:30, and then also the following episode is on Bank Holiday Monday at 9.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you get double two, Peaky Bell.
And they follow on from the last ever episodes of Poldark, which I did want to mention, because Poldark fans will want me to mention that finally comes to an end. This version of Poldark comes to an end on Bank Holiday Monday as well.
Nips out for Poldark, and then flat caps on for Peaky Blinders.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
Summed it up.
Also out this week is Brassic. This is a six-part Lancashire set comedy starring Joseph Gilgan of Preacher and This Is England fame as Vinny, a hopeless, feckless idiot of a man, a hot mess, if you will. Isn't that right, Terry?
No.
I'm taking it back. We're degendering hot mess.
Oh, my God.
So Joe Gilgan is a hot mess. In fact, so is everyone in this show. So we've successfully reclaimed the term.
Oh, God, you're such a bellend.
Did you enjoy this, Terry? I mean, it's a Lancashire set comedy.
Loved everything about this.
Of course you did.
So this is just such original telly. We've talked before about the representation of certain communities and certain class in this country on television, and this for me does something totally different, which nobody else really does. So this was created by Joe Gilgan, and he stars in it, and it's about him and his mates, essentially, growing up in this kind of small town / suburbia in this northern suburb. And it kind of starts on this amazing police chase. Well, it starts with him on a bridge, which is a whole different thing. But then there's this incredible police car chase, and he does this monologue, which is absolutely, you know, train spotting inspired. But let me tell you, it's so brilliant. And I wrote some of it down because it's so, and it feels like kind of a manifesto from him and from the show. And it sets it out to Britain. He says, fuck the middle class, fuck the Guardian, fuck three holidays a year, fuck drinking red wine and fucking talking shit at dinner parties. And then he kind of says, you know, about how these towns and these communities and these people are viewed. And he says, what they'll never understand, and that's the middle classes, it's this, we're not victims, we have just have a different way of life. It's about having a laugh with your mates. It's about finding a way to survive. And it frames for me those communities which have been in many ways neglected by the government, which haven't had investment for years, which the stories are often around, you know, kind of what's happened to them after the decline of industry, the lack of opportunities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The narratives around these towns, around this country, tend to be very negative. And all of the stories we see are quite grim and it's quite, you know, unrelenting. And actually what this does is remind you of the humour and the warmth and the heart and the bonds at the heart of so many of these communities. And this does that so well. This friendship group is kind of weird. Everybody's a very unique character. His best mate has a girlfriend who's kind of, you know, wants to escape and wants to go and make a better life for her and her kid, played by Michelle Keegan. There's an amazing cameo from Dominic West, who you do not expect to turn up as his doctor, because he does play Vinny, this Lancashire lad who is suffering from bipolar. So while it is funny, it also says a lot about what's happening in this country. It says a lot about the kind of representation of certain communities. It says a lot about the NHS and kind of how we're treating mental health issues and the kind of weight that people have. There's some real significant proper stuff that's tackled in here alongside all of that. It's got such heart. And I have to say, Joel Gilgan is just an absolute, like, I just think he's incredible. I think A, coming up with something like this, B, getting it made for a Sky original show, but just kind of the perspective he's putting out there, I just love this. I love this. I love this.
Everything you just said is true. However, I feel you've slightly missold this as this incredibly worthy commentary on sort of social structure and the working class, which of course it is. It but is. Let's not forget, this is a show in which they try to chloroform a Shetland pony and run over a chicken.
Well, that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it, is it has these moments. That monologue said more about those communities and the kind of misrepresentation of those communities than most 5,000 word think pieces I have read in The Guardian. But there are brilliant comedy set pieces at the heart of this, which are just amazingly entertaining. He is so charming. He is so funny. He's got such kind of natural charm, natural wit. And it is very funny and it is, you know, a comedy show. But also I do think, like, it's a fucking Trojan horse. It is a Trojan horse of a show, because the stuff that it does, the scene with Dominic West, what you learn about that from kind of our treatment of mental health in this country and handled so lightly is just like, I just think
showing
it's
him
brilliant.
His Tinder app and it's just, what is happening? It made me laugh within the first minute, which is pretty fun. I'd literally just written down, fuck the plumage, exclamation mark. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed the little expletive-ridden Danny Boyle riff. I thought it was great. I must admit,
comedy?
Yes. A lot of the sort of soul of the working class stuff that you have distilled from this was a little lost on me. However, I did really enjoy it. I did think it was very funny. The only parts of this that didn't quite land for me were, I have a thing with comedies, but the trope I hate the most in all of drama / comedy / fiction is the normally boyfriend, father, husband is left in charge of the child and then fuck it up in spectacular fashion by being a bell end. And it's so irritating. It's just the trope of it. I dislike but that as a trope. And it's not just about kids. It's not just about, you know, the looking after kids. It's the, you know, feckless man being put in position of sort of semi-responsibility and then fucks it up and will he get found out? That is a trope that I find
Well, what
aggravating.
I loved is they, and you use the word feckless in the interview, is that in the intro, sorry, is that's how these men without kind of qualifications and steady jobs, and that's how they're often portrayed, right, as feckless men. But I think this shows that they fuck up and make mistakes, but they're not feckless and lazy, and they just live a very different life.
They're
feckful. Yeah,
they're full of feck.
Full of feck. Okay.
Don't let that,
I misfecked.
Don't let that whole trope thing get in the way. It's a totally valid storyline because he is that character. It's totally, he is that kind of person. Not
a
feckless.
Hot mess.
Well, whatever you want to call it, he lives a very complicated life, and he ends up having, you know, running around doing these things, and the hectic whirlwind of his life is kind of, you know, what it's all about. I thought it was fantastic. fantastic as well. It's so interesting because I think it all started when he was talking to Dominic West on the set of Pride, the film they starred in together.
Great film.
And he was telling him real stories from his real life and talking about what it's like being himself, being bipolar, being working class, blah, 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 blah. He doesn't live the kind of actor's, you know, life. He doesn't have any of those luxuries that you'd expect. He just lives a very kind of fairly normal life of a normal human being. And Dominic West was like, my God, these are fucking brilliant. He was telling hilarious stories of stuff that goes on. And Dominic West said, you should turn it into a TV series. And that was the inspiration. So it's interesting. He got the inspiration from him. And real kudos to Sky, I think, for kind of running with it. It's great.
Yeah. It's not often you can say, I really enjoyed the bit where they put hair dye on a pony. So that is Brassic. And Brassic airs, Boyd, when and where?
Oh, Sky One. Now I'm going to have to check that. I didn't write this down. But
yeah, I normally do.
Do you know
this,
what? What I do know is I think I'm pretty much sure it's Sky One tomorrow night, Tuesday. And I think it's all being made available as a box set.
Okay, so it's dropping as a box set on Tuesday. Okay, Brassic on Sky One. Next up this week is Sanditon, which takes us back to the 18th century for a Jane Austen period drama in which an idiotic Greek Cypriot estate agent attempts to let out properties in North London. Isn't that right, Boyd?
Yes.
See, it must be right, Boyd, as I distinctly remember you giving me the show to watch before I went off on holiday, which I watched, and that was the plot of that show.
I see what you've done there.
Yes.
Can I just say that Brassic starts on the 22nd of August?
You can.
Which is Thursday.
Excellent.
First of all, but all of all episodes are available. And sorry, yeah, so Stafflet's Flats, which I do love. Did you watch Stafflet's Flats?
I did watch Stafflet's Flats.
That is Jamie Dimitri's knockabout sitcom about estate agents and letting agents. He's really funny. But I felt Sanditon is ITV's huge, big new bank holiday weekend period drama, Jane Austen, this, that, and the other. So I felt we had to do it. Sorry.
Yes. So I went and watched Series 2 of Stafflet's Flats, a show for which, and this is true, there is a thread on the IMDb bemoaning the fact that no one gets it. Let me tell you, Boyd, I didn't get it.
I mean, this doesn't surprise
me. I didn't understand
it. This is also partly why I decided we shouldn't do Stafflet's Flats.
It feels to me like the humour of Stafflet's Flats is pitched quite specifically. Like, it's on a very specific frequency, which my personal DAB radio does not receive. I didn't get it. I don't understand it. What the hell is it about?
It's about a gigantic bunch of doofuses who work in a lettings agency.
Yeah, I know.
It's very funny.
There was a whole world of no for me on Stafflet's Flats.
Okay, well, we're not reviewing that.
I know, but I'm reviewing it.
So move on.
Do you know why? Because you made me fucking watch it.
I need a wee. Get to the point. Yeah.
Right.
BAFTA nominated.
Anyway, that is Stafflet's Flats for should you feel the need for a comedy that I and apparently many others don't understand, then when the Stafflet's Flats
I think that's on Monday tonight.
It's on Monday.
I mean, having said that, I'm making all these things up.
Boyd doesn't know. It's on telly.
I don't know
at
anymore.
Some point. He doesn't know. Maybe you should watch it or review it. Apparently, that's a thing that's happening. having said that, in the meantime, we have a show called Sanditon, which I did not watch and don't know what it is. Boyd, what is Sanditon about?
Sanditon is an adaptation of an unfinished Jane Austen novel, Lazy, which she wrote 11 chapters of, I believe, and then she got ill and I think pretty much died. And it's basically about a group of posh types in whatever century. And the focus is on this guy who wants to establish a seaside resort called Sanditon. And it's kind of like partly about...
Sanditon.
And it's partly about him, his dream. He's obsessed with this dream of establishing this seaside resort. It looks like basically Southend, as far as I can tell. And it's kind of... one of the more interesting elements of it is, you know, how did these seaside resorts come into being and what was it like for people to discover them and find them and how did you go bathing, all that, that's there. And then at the same time, this this young woman is welcomed into the world of super posh, very rich family with a matriarch who's has to decide whether to leave her money to all her various relatives and hangers-on. And so it's got a kind of, you know, it's got a kind of classic Jane Austen vibe to it, but with this weird seaside town birthing element to it, hasn't it?
Yeah, I struggle with this a bit. I love a Jane Austen adaptation. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Andrew Davis, who adapted it, right? He did Pride and Prejudice, one of the greatest adaptations.
Exactly.
But it is weird because they set up this whole, like, the seaside is weird and dark. There's an amazing, like, on-the-nose line where she decides, this young girl decides to leave and travel to the seaside town. And her dad goes, be careful. And she goes, of what, Papa? And he says, everything. And the whole setup is that the seaside is weird and dark and full of odd people and eccentrics and people who are hiding things. And so it's got this weird kind of darkness and just like eccentricity that I'm not used to in a Jane Austen. And as you say, she only completed 9 chapters, and they've obviously, was it 9?
I thought it was 11, but you know, let me have a look. I may be wrong.
It is 11, you're right. So she only wrote 11 chapters. The script has been stretched to 8 hours long. They're talking about a second season potentially.
Yes.
So
Want it to be the new Downton, basically. Yeah. Clearly.
And here's the problem, right? Is and it's got all the classic setups of a Jane Austen. So there's a guy who is indifferent and arrogant, and there's an amazing line where she goes, "He's inclined not to think highly of our sex. He had a bruising experience in the past," because, you know, one woman breaks a man for eternity and therefore is horrible to all women. It's got all of that stuff, but I just, in my head, as I am binging Downton, I just kept thinking, it's no
this
Downton
This is shit
Abbey.
Downton.
It's no Downton yeah. Abbey. It's no yeah. Downton Abbey. I didn't find, so Charlotte Haywood, as you said, is the main character, played by Rose Williams, I think, who is kind of compelling, but I wasn't massively that invested in her, which you really need to be in a Jane Austen, because that's what propels you along. Chris Marshall, as you say, is the guy who really wants to make this place into a hot destination. I wasn't quite sure that he quite fit that. There was something that I just found quite... it wasn't compelling across the whole piece, and I found it quite a hard watch to get all the way through to the end. As an Austen, it didn't kind of have that Austen power for me, and as a period, now I'm like the full Downton obsessive. It's no Downton, so yeah, it's quite damning with faint praise.
Yeah, I mean
Downton sets the bar very, very high, Terry. Yeah, you can't expect anything else really to come close.
It was weirdly directed, I thought, because do you notice an incredible number of close-ups, of like quite extreme close-ups. I became obsessed with it after I started noticing it early on, and then more and more there's a big ball where they will go, and they're dancing around, and it kind of, the camera focuses on their faces and it follows them as they're dancing around. You don't see their legs at all. It's quite a weird way of doing the whole thing, and that kind of slightly put me off a little bit. So I think it's trying to be different. It's trying to do something different. That's why I felt almost try hard in a sense of doing something different to normal period drama. We can't just do normal period drama. We have to do something different. So it's got very kind of stylistic weirdness to it, and in the end, as you say, I'm not sure if I'm going to carry on watching it. Whereas, I know we keep comparing it, but it's so the case that Downton Abbey, as you have proved single-handedly, is the fact you can't stop watching it. And that classic first episode set up so well, and it was so compelling. This one, I'm like, I enjoyed it, but I don't need to carry on. There's certainly consequentiality to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, shit Downton, a.k.a. Sanditon, airs where, Boyd?
ITV Sunday night, 9 o'clock.
Sunday night, 9 o'clock.
It's a big weekend for me.
Meanwhile, Downton Abbey is streaming on Amazon. Okay, so also out this week is the third season of Netflix's somewhat controversial 13 Reasons Why. So controversial, apparently, that they wouldn't let us see it. So here we are again with a Netflix show that we cannot see. Are either of you still watching this show? Did anyone watch season 2?
I watched season 2.
Was it good?
And no. It was annoying, but I kind of felt I'm going to have to carry on watching it just to confirm how annoying it was.
Do you not like season 1?
No, I really liked season 1.
Oh, see, so did I. See,
apart from the famous scene of her taking her own life, which has been edited out famously, which we discussed it with as a news story. I thought it was really interesting and compelling and daring. You know, it's kind of quite a kind of full on depiction. I mean, you know, Euphoria's outdone it, but you know, they had a similarly kind of no nonsense approach to the realities of teenage life. So I really like that about it. And, you know, great cast. I mean, and then season 2, it floundered because it was trying to maintain the format of the 13 Reasons, literally these tape recordings, and kind of totally went off the deep end and had a trial which didn't really work. And then it had brought in a new mystery storyline about Polaroids being taken of people doing stuff, and then had a climactic ending which was even more distressing somehow than a sexual assault on a guy. That was even more distressing than what happened at the end of season 1. So it just felt, the whole thing felt I'm using that phrase a lot, try hard to me, season 2. But I have high hopes for season 3, because apparently in theory they're going to do something different, taking it to a different direction. I think it's more of a kind of traditional almost mystery, so a main character is dead, like who did it, you know, it's kind of have that format. But
I don't think I'm ever going to find out, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, fair enough. I do feel like Euphoria is kind of... that's now the high watermark.
It's no longer as fresh as it seemed when it first...
But nor as daring, nor as brutally honest and real. And I think Euphoria has shown how to do that stuff so brilliantly. I can't now... I mean, it's my honest feeling. I'll go into it with an open mind. I will check it out. But, you know, I can't imagine it's going to be... That's good.
Well, if you did press on with season two, the third season of 13 Reasons Why drops on Netflix on Friday and may, as Boyd has optimistically said, be good. Pick of the week.
Brassic for me.
Hey, it's Peaky Blinders. What's wrong with you? Nothing can stand to the might of the Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, it's Peaky for me, but Brassic is brilliant as well.
Okay,
it's right, definitely not Sanderson.
Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't manage to spend as much time preparing.
I mean, clearly.
I didn't manage to preparing for this podcast as I would normally on account of having been off last week. So I haven't done what I would call a banshee per se. So,
oh, well, sod off.
Hang on, like 3 weeks ago, you just read the Wikipedia page. So which bit of research have you skipped?
I'm going to do something slightly different where I'm just going to make it up. So what I wanted to do is, because I was watching This Life and I was watching Jack Davenport, and I wasn't going to start talking about coupling because that would be ridiculous. But I suddenly thought, when I first encountered Jack Davenport was in Ultraviolet. Now, this is a cheat as well, because I have technically mentioned Ultraviolet on this podcast before, but it was before the Banshee segment was a thing. Therefore, it gets through on a technicality. So, 1998, six episodes only. This is a Joe Ahern show, and it starred Jack Davenport as a guy whose best friend goes missing. It's Stephen Moyer is the best friend, goes missing the day before his wedding, well, the night before his wedding. And he goes looking for him, and he gets embroiled into this underworld where he realises that vampires are a thing. Except in the whole of this show, it's absolutely true, they never mention the word vampire. They call them code 5. Of course, the Roman numeral for 5 is a V, and V is for vampire. And anyway, so he ends up being drawn into this sort of secret sort of law enforcement group who target vampires. And in it is Agent Vaughn, a.k.a. Idris Elba. Yeah, and this was where I think I first encountered Idris Elba as well. And it was incredible. It was almost like completely Nolanized. So they treated the idea of vampires with 100% seriousness. There was no tongue-in-cheek. It was deathly serious. And it dealt with paedophilia, where there's a vampire child that they're pimping out to paedophiles. But obviously, there's one point he's talking to paedophiles. It's not the same, though, is it? He's probably older than you are, you know? Like, it's really fucking dark. It was an incredibly good show. And they have, like, guns with little... because vampires don't show up on video footage. They have guns with little screens on them and a camera, so they can look at the footage to make sure what they're going to shoot at with these little carbon bullets is a vampire. But it was really, really good. And when I interviewed Idris Elba before... God, I can't even remember what I think might have been a Luther season. He was talking about how when he goes to conventional, what people still go up to him and go, Vaughn, because people remember Ultraviolet. Even though it was only 6 episodes, I think they did syndicate it. Like they sold it to the US, it aired on the Sci-Fi Channel over there. And Howard Gordon actually tried to adapt this to an ongoing series in America. And Idris Elba was recast as the same character. But as Gordon has himself admitted, he fucked it up spectacularly and lost everything that made it good. And so it never got beyond the pilot stage, so they never actually put it to season. But Ultraviolet, genuinely amazing 6 episodes. I know there is a box set, a DVD box set, so you can almost certainly get it secondhand. It's probably about 50p. Genuinely, if you've never seen Ultraviolet, I cannot recommend it enough. It's brilliant. It's really, really, really good stuff.
Did you mention that Joe Ahern? You mentioned Andrew Lincoln. Joe Ahern wrote episodes of This Life.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, so this all ties together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've picked, does anyone remember Babylon?
Oh, what with James Nesbitt?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, that was an odd one, wasn't it? Because like, didn't they air the first episode?
Yes,
and then it was years before we had it again.
No, well, it was a while. It wasn't years. There was a 90-minute pilot episode,
yeah, which I saw and
directed
enjoyed.
By Danny Boyle, no less. So the whole thing was co-created by Danny Boyle, Jesse Armstrong, and Sam Bain of Peep Show and Succession, etc. fame. And it was a kind of comedy drama about the Metropolitan Police, and it dealt with a lot of issues, and it was incredibly current and up to date. But I totally forgot. So I loved it, and I went to a screening of it after. I thought, this is incredible. And then you say there was, I think, a delay between, and then they showed the full series. series and it was never recommissioned. The cast is incredible. Bertie Carvel, Daniel Kaluuya was in it, James Nesbitt, Patterson Joseph, Nicola Walker, Adam Deacon, etc., etc. But the star of it, which I totally forgot, while I was doing research for a piece I'm writing, is Britt Marling.
Yeah.
Britt Marling.
As the PR person.
As of the OA fame. Is the American PR woman brought in by the Met to kind of modernize their communications. And she's really funny and kind of, you know, interesting and kind of over-the-top American PR woman thing, but then there's depth to her as well. It's Britt fucking Marling. Yeah. I totally
and she's
forgot.
Amazing in it.
And she's amazing in
but
it.
But what happened? Like, I never, like, as you said, the pilot dropped and then nothing. Like,
well, I think it took
months.
A while. It took a while. Actually, it took a year, in fact. I'm just checking.
Yeah, was it?
They had to make... So they did the pilot, and the Trump was like, yeah, this is brilliant. Now go and make it. And then they had to gather this big, huge cast of people to do the actual proper series, and then they made 7 episodes. But it didn't really... You know, I'm pretty sure it wasn't a hit. Like, hardly anyone fucking watched it in the end, even though this big, ambitious, bold, funny, dramatic show about the way the police work and it dealt with racism and everything you want to deal with. And it had fucking Britt Marling in it. But it kind of went by the wayside, and that was it. 7 episodes or whatever, and then it was over. So, fucking
that's
Babylon.
No, that's really good. No, Babylon's great as well. I think you should watch both. That's what I think.
Vampires. I'm Terry the Vampire
You
girl.
should genuinely watch Ultraviolet. I think you'd really like it.
I'm going to write it in my, like, official notebook.
It's a really good show. I'm just gutted that it ended, never continued. Anyway, that is it for another episode of the Pilot TV Podcast. Please go to iTunes at once and give us all the stars. Then head to the box office of the London Podcast Festival and give us all the money for our live show on Friday the 13th. I am off next week, as mentioned, as I will be at D23 in LA, immersing myself in The Mandalorian, Loki, WandaVision, and every other Disney Plus show they'll let me within grabbing distance of. Terry and Boyd will be here, though, most likely with some incredibly glamorous A-lister to take my place. I'll be back, hopefully, the week after, if the feature that I'm writing is going well. Until then, and before I head off to the convention, and let's be honest, swing by the new Star Wars Galaxy's Edge theme park ride at Disneyland, because it's right opposite the convention centre. It's going to be amazing. Really looking forward to that. All that's left, I guess, is for me to wish you all a fond farewell and hope Terry doesn't turn this into a This Is England fan podcast tribute nonsense thing in my absence.
I am wearing a Fred Perry today.
You wear a Fred Perry every day. Pilot out.